Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Friends and neighbors, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, and announcing I am newly married and moving to Dubuque, Iowa.
I think we all knew that was coming.
That I was going to get married?
Yeah. Yeah, and the Iowa part. I am Matthew Ramsey, Wile E. Coyote, beer in the headlights, and hair of the doggy dog. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. But you guys already know this because we've said it at least 50 times.
So not perfectly 50 times.
No, not even close.
We've loved many of them.
But that's right. This is our 50th episode. Which is kind of what makes, I guess, this next part a little bittersweet. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll just say it. As amazing as this has been, Eddie and I have decided to consciously uncouple.
You know, we're calling it quits on top.
I get Eddie.
Yeah. This is like gym class all over again. But yeah, I guess we decided to kind of focus on our own personal endeavors. Eddie?
I'm moving to Iowa to open up a Japanese-style bar. Enough standing room for two people, me and one of my guests.
One dish at a time, right?
One person at a time.
One person at a time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be moving on to my next book, DTF in the DC, down to Forge in DC, a whole guide to foraging throughout the district. So thank you.
What are your favorite things to forage in, in Rock Creek Park? The hypodermic needles?
Yeah, some cool things. I'm just kidding. Obviously, it's April 1st, so we should probably talk about this on another day.
Yes. Everyone has been deluged with April Fool's Day jokes already. Anything?
Have you guys got? We haven't even introduced our guest.
Yeah, let me introduce them first before I ask the first question. This week, we are joined by Lauren Winter and Brian Miller, co-founders of Edit Lab at Street Sense, besties from Savannah College of Art and Design, and fixtures in DC's restaurant industry.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, get it? Yeah, plumbing fixtures.
I like to think of myself as a light fixture.
A light fixture. I was looking up other words for fixtures. Jig. Would you call yourself a jig?
I would call Brian a jig.
Well, welcome. Are there any pranks that you do that you would have done on April 1st in your office?
Are you pranking us right now?
Yeah.
Is, I guess, the better question.
Well, I'm actually Brian, and this is Lauren over here.
Knew it.
No, we're not pranking you right now. I don't know if we've ever pranked each other.
Not really. I mean,
Brian
I think
not on purpose.
All the time.
Not on an April Fool's thing. Occasionally in the office, but I think we don't limit it to one day a year. And I think today is kind of, it's sort of like going out on New Year's Eve, like sort of the amateur's prank day. So, yeah, for us, I think we prefer
you're in for the
to,
long game.
We prefer to play it straight on April 1st.
Make every day April 1st.
Well, you started off with just two of you in your design firm, but now you have grown to quite a size. How many folks are under your wing now?
We have 14 in the studio now.
Mm-hmm. Holy moly.
Yeah, in our DC office. And we have a few part-timers that are helping out a little bit.
And growing, if you listen to Shift Drink and are very Revit capable from a software perspective.
We are taking resumes.
Nice.
Ooh. That's our first job shout out on our show. All right, for all you software nerds out there.
We have a pretty big reach in the design world, so I'm sure. Now, Shift Drink, Eddie did something a little different this time. He asked you guys to choose each other's Shift Drink.
Since you know each other so well. So, Brian, I asked you first, what was the Shift Drink that you thought that Lauren would enjoy today?
So the shift drink that I chose for Lauren is a coffee mug mimosa. It is something...
It's called a Lauren coffee.
It is something that Lauren enjoys. Maybe, Lauren, you can talk more about your history and experience with this drink.
This has always been a favorite of mine ever since I was a little girl.
We believe it. It was a teacup before, right?
No. So every other Saturday, you'll find me at Primrose in the brunch realm. And so I started, well, it didn't start then. It definitely started in an architecture firm. But let's just say it started at Primrose recently that I drink a mimosas out of a coffee mug while I work my shift there.
It's kind of the perfect vessel.
It is my shift drink
for the person on the go.
That's right. So I do have a mug that says this might be wine. And often
very,
is.
Very open about
people
it.
Think it's a joke.
That's like that makes it even like sneakier when you're like saying this is probably a joke, but then it's definitely not a joke.
It's not a joke.
And then all right, vice versa. What did you choose for Brian?
So I chose a Negroni for Brian. I was very serious about this, and I tried to think about something I see him drink often, and I believe he likes them a lot.
I think Brian...
But at the same time, Brian drinks so many different things that I couldn't even know one.
I've made many a Negroni for you, Brian, behind
yes,
the bar.
Yes, you have. Typically, my shift... I don't really think of myself doing shift drinks since I used to be a partner at U Street Music Hall, and occasionally, like when the night was done, we would shut down between like 3, 4 a.m., you know, get all the trash sorted out, everything else. So if I felt like good about myself and I was sticking around and people were sticking around to, you know, shoot the shit, have drinks, whatever afterward, I would occasionally, like when everything was done, and not that I was working hard compared to anybody else there, just kind of hanging out, but I would pour myself like a little rye on the rocks, always like Beamer over Holt. It was like my little, so even today when I do like a little rye on the rocks out of a plastic tumbler, I'm like, the night well done.
Nice. It's funny that you guys both have like a vessel that you guys associate with the...
We're very tactile people.
Yeah. I almost made you a chocolate martini.
Thanks, Laura. That's not a shift drink. That's a not.
That's not a shift drink. That was a fun time in Savannah.
Yes. So you guys met in school?
Correct.
Yes, we were both architecture majors at the Savannah College of Art and Design. I started the program there. Lauren transferred in later. We got to know each other and helped each other out in school with presentations, thesis, etc., and both moved to the DC area after that. And
was that planned at all, or was that kind of serendipitous?
I think a lot of people left Savannah. My family was in the area at the time. I think a lot of people left Savannah and drove north until they hit a city.
Yeah.
So a lot of people ended up in DC. Lauren was living here for a bit. It was kind of like a mini recession in 2000-2001, so jobs were a little hard to come by. DC area hiring was doing okay. Lauren got a job up here. I got a job a little bit after that, and I was always like, I'm going to work here a few years, build up my resume, and then move to New York City.
Right.
And then like just in a few years in DC, I just got to think like, I really, really like DC. I really like what's happening in DC, and it's really flourishing. Like, I would go up and visit friends in New York all the time, and then I would come back and think, like, my God, what we have here is really good, and I'm really excited about being involved in it. So it kind of just kept embedding from there. And so Lauren kind of went the other way around.
Well, no, I was on my way to New York, too.
Yeah.
But you
were from New York.
It was from New York. That's true. So
DC has a little sticky power. I don't know. It does that to you.
It does. Like, I think just the community of it. Everyone kind of knows everyone. It's a bit ancestral, and you could have a house here with a yard and, you know, see the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, there was quite a bit of turning point in D.C., you know, 15 years ago. That's about when the firm was created. And
we'd been working in D.C., both of us, since the early 2000s, but we started at it around 2008, 2009.
And that was just a turning point in a lot of new places opening, a lot of people who worked in industry kind of coming to age.
I think that's what we saw a lot, and why it fit us so well to go into the industry and design restaurants and bars was because we would bartend, we would serve, Brian would DJ, and we saw all of our friends coming of age and starting to open bars and restaurants themselves. And so it was really nice to be working with our friends who, you know, we grew up with here, and then have them have their own restaurant and their own bar and, you know, be able to do that for them.
Well, even looking back now at where DC is and where DC was at that time, it's pretty cool to see your guys' DNA interwoven with so much of the change that's happened in the city. So it's super cool.
Yeah, I think when we think about the number of places that we've designed now, it feels crazy to even us, but, you know, they're all kind of happened over the past decade or so, like one at a time. And, you know, you have a project that lasts a year, 2 years. You never think of it in the moment like, oh, this is part of this enormous portfolio, but they just kind of stack up eventually. Yeah. And it's a little wild.
Well,
we kind of got our portfolio like when the chefs post like the Instagram of like their tickets on the spike at the end of the night.
Right,
that's kind of
right,
like
right.
Our sets of drawings yeah. now.
Should we go through that list?
I think before yep. we go too deep into this, let's just do a little DC Weekend Review.
Oh, yeah, the DC Weekend Review news. Last Monday, while we were recording our show, Speed Rack Mid-Atlantic Regionals occurred right here in DC, and Jesse Weinstein won.
Woo, woo, woo.
So she'll be representing our region at the finals in Chicago on May 7th.
Which is happening...
same time as the James Beard Awards, too.
Yes.
So that is going to be... quite a weekend too.
So Chicago, get ready, DC's coming for you.
If not, go there for the green river, which Brian Miller loves so much.
It's so green.
Maybe that might be
conspiracy
emerald
theory
green.
Is that I just saw it in person for the first time this last St. Patrick's Day, and they say it's they switched to a vegetable dye from a chemical dye into a secret recipe. My conspiracy theory is that is not a vegetable color, that it's not a color found in nature.
They are brainwashed.
I'm a little surprised it's taken this long to switch to like a non-chemical, like, we're going to turn...
Well, they said they switched in like the 60s or something.
Okay.
I just don't believe.
Every year.
Because they're very secretive about the recipe, because I think it's just incredibly toxic.
I think it could only benefit the Potomac that we get that recipe.
It's a little,
yeah,
little cleanse.
Absolutely.
Share the wealth, Rom.
That's a... friends that are also going to be joining the James Beards. Finals came out.
Yeah, we have a couple of local faces that are going to be making their way up to Chicago as well. So we have Tom Cunanan and Amy Brandwine representing or vying for the Mid-Atlantic Chef of the Year. Piché Ong from this very hotel for pastry. Mara Jodkis.
Yeah.
Shift Drink alum for her article on Doritos.
Doritos.
They just pencil her in now. She's a lock.
It's amazing because she writes the full spectrum, right? She does
everything.
The lightest,
from
we talked about this,
movement all the way
on the show,
to food trends.
And it's like she writes such powerful articles about things that are happening in DC.
She cuts deep into the psyche of the American gut.
And I'm just glad that Doritos is getting its fame too. Also, obviously, cherry blossoms. We're peaking today. Today's the day. Birds of a Feather Make Burgers Together. Smash Mouth singer Steve Harwell was recently pictured with body double and timeline alternate Guy Fieri cooking over a flaming grill of what the fuck. These two apparently have been friends for over a decade, which is like it's been like a pretty continuous meme on the internet. But I guess the only not pictured one was the Insane Clown Posse's Violent J, who was apparently inside grabbing a slice of ketchup.
And we bid farewell at the end of the month. We bid farewell to two DC restaurants this weekend, Sally's Middle Name and Maple up in Columbia Heights. Notably, neither of you designed any of those restaurants, so maybe that means something. But
we've designed plenty of restaurants that have closed.
Yes.
And that haven't opened.
Yeah.
But we were sad to see these two leave. Matthew.
Well, okay. I was trying to say goodbye to Sally's because obviously it meant a lot to me. I was on my way to brunch on Saturday, and we parked on 13th. I'm opening my door to get out, and a car, Chivalry is not dead. This guy opened my car door for me with his car.
So Matthew is now driving around DC.
It's already convertible
style.
Now it's Jeep style.
It's a Jeep.
I'm
no
down,
doors.
I'm down a door.
Hanging out. You know, with his leg just splayed open in the middle of the road.
You could be a mailman.
I get the man spread is the upside to this.
Yeah, you work UPS. You could wear brown shorts.
Yeah. All right. Let's play a little game we call Two Truths, One Lie.
Two truths, one lie.
Cut out it.
All right, now they're looking at each other like they might not. Did they prepare?
They did prepare. I believe you did a collaborative Two Truths, One Lie to talk about your
Yeah, we wanted to make them about our work experience. So we have Two Truths and a Lie about various job site visits, construction sites we've been on.
Oh, awesome.
So one is we were recently down in Florida doing some surveying for a project, and we had to, you know, as part of this, you know, looking at this project, we had to kind of measure the space, take a look inside, outside, measured the inside, went out to survey the patio, and there was an alligator on the patio. I guess what? The concrete was like, 'cause the sun was like a little warmer than the surrounding lawn, because it was near like one of those little freshwater, like small artificial lakes. Around like the developments there, we called the owner and we're like, yeah, we're not surveying the patio today, you're gonna have to send us the dimensions. And they're like, what's the problem? Like, there's an alligator out there. And they're like, how big is it?
They were like, please.
And it was like 3 feet long. Like, it wasn't like a man-eating alligator, but that was not an occupational hazard we were going to broach for this project.
OSHA, is this okay?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And if we lived there, we'd be like certainly behavioral experts, but we don't. It's a foreign thing for us.
There was nothing smaller than me at the time, so I didn't feel comfortable. If there was a puppy there, maybe, but no.
Next one is another one of our projects we had under construction. They were doing some night construction and got a visit from Homeland Security. They forgot to file like the notice or whatever for the equipment they'd been using. And got a visit from Homeland Security for releasing radiation.
Oh, interesting.
Which they're really touchy about in downtown D.C. So, yeah, that happened. And then they just hadn't filed because it was like the X-ray machine for the slab.
Huh.
And so same thing as like when you get an X-ray in the hospital, there's a little radiation. It's a lot stronger when you're trying to go like through concrete to figure out like what's buried in there.
Right.
That's what the RAY stands for.
Another.
Did you find Jimmy Hoffa?
Well, we do have another concrete story as well as our third one.
One of these concrete stories is the...
So we have one of us during college, when we were in Savannah College of Art and Design, we went to Charleston and they had a building there under construction that we visited the construction site. And one of us stepped unknowingly into some wet concrete and went up past our knees.
Oh.
And then got kind of hosed off and had to go through...
Lost a shoe for a minute.
Had to go through the rest of the day, you know, another like 6 hours until we got back to Savannah with basically like wet concrete jeans.
It does form quickly.
Now, these are very well orchestrated lies. I should say that. There's a lot of collaboration going on here. Lie, thank you.
I was like, Eddie's
trying to look
wrong
in my eyes. I told him I'm a good poker player.
Oh, and yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes,
well, we'll get into that.
We have yet to play poker together yet.
I'm guessing the alligator thing, it must be the lie then. Maybe.
I was going to say the X-ray.
The X-ray? A lot of radiation. I feel like that could happen, but yeah, maybe right. There's two concrete stories. One is a foil. The other one is true. Say it.
I mean, I can't believe that there's equipment out there that releases that much X-ray radiation.
Okay,
I'm
gonna follow your lead on this.
That Homeland Security is just gonna show up and be like, "What's up with this? What's up, guys? This is not 24. Are we going with that?
Yeah.
Okay, the X-ray is the lie.
Yeah, that's true. They are apparently pretty powerful machines that they use to do this stuff. And I guess like the companies usually give them like a heads up, like, "Hey, we're X-raying this building on this night" or whatever. And this was back when I was working for another company and doing like law firm fit outs and stuff. So it was just in the middle of an office building, you know, like four blocks from the White House or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently they've got radiation stuff that picks up on that pretty
That's
quick.
That's crazy though. Yeah. That there's like, I mean, I guess it makes sense that they're actively like scanning for radiation spikes, but.
Sure. Whatever.
That's it. But I can't, I don't even know like what this like.
If you live in DC, they are recording like everything you say. We are all under surveillance.
I mean, this.
I'm also wearing a tinfoil hat right now.
You said they record the podcast already. It's not like it's not a conspiracy. They stream it.
This is pre-recorded.
This is not. You can find our podcast on iTunes, not on the dark web. Okay, it's easy to find.
But they twist your words on the dark web and they formulate another podcast.
Oh, I'm sure they'll.
Yeah. There's a conspiracy out there. So what is the lie?
No alligator.
No alligator.
Although I wish there was.
That's weirdly the most plausible of the stories. Like, who would step in concrete? Who would step in, like, a vat of concrete on
a job site?
Excuse me,
I might.
True.
Yeah. That was me. I was taking a picture. They were very upset with me.
What is
I went down very fast.
The NXS album, is it Blonde Concrete? No. Blonde, I don't know.
Yes.
I feel like
there's
a concrete album name somewhere.
You're talking about the band Concrete Blonde?
Yeah.
Concrete Blonde. Ah, that's what oh, God damn it. Yeah, I am. I linked it to NXS. You still have those jeans?
No. Or those shoes or that underwear.
Woof.
I could see Lauren that's, you know, falling into the concrete and then displaying her on one of your designs, like, you know, Han Solo.
I mean, stuck in okay. That one, you know, like Lauren
if only
waist
there was
deep.
Instagram at the time. Exactly.
Lauren waist deep in concrete. That's like 30 inches. Like, it's not a lot.
That's rude.
It's a little unfortunate that it was before social media because there's a lot.
Some of us think it's unfortunate. Others are
others are blessed.
All right, so let's get back because we were about to talk about like all the restaurants.
Okay, so let's go through some.
It's a
of your list of restaurants.
Insanely long list.
This is not in chronological order, but this actually came in order whatever popped in our head. So we have the Daikaya group. So that's Daikaya, Bantamkin, King, Haikon, and their new one, Hatobi.
Hatoba. And the next one after that in the former Graffiato space next to Daikaya.
Oh, that's right. It's exciting. It's
called Graffiato 2. Tail Up Goat. Mm-hmm. And their new...
Graffiaya.
More like Graffa No-No. The Tail Up...
That was quick. That's good.
Yeah. The Tail Up Goat and their new bar, Reveler's Hour.
Yes.
Primrose, Gibson, Brixton, Red Hen and All Purpose, The Dabney.
Boundary Stone.
Columbia Room, without the. Rogue 24, which is now Tiger Fork.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ooh. Same space. The White Owl, the Rigsby and the Carlisle Hotel.
I'm kind of beginning to think there's only two designers in this town. Like, you guys have designed...
Us and everyone else.
Yeah. Like everything. It's amazing. And it's like really daunting.
I mean, I don't know if you've heard, but there have been a lot of restaurants that have opened up in DC over the past decade or so.
Yeah.
It's kind of been a thing.
It's a thing.
So, yeah, I mean, we have like a slice of them come our way. But I think we're really doing probably fewer restaurants now than we used to, but kind of being a little more selective about the ones we do to kind of make sure we're doing ones that are really kind of that best in class. And we don't really, the best in class could be like a neighborhood bar, it could be a Michelin starred restaurant, it could be like a big kind of patio kind of afternoon drinking spot. Like for us, it's more about like to work on the projects that are really ambitious in terms of what they're trying to achieve on their terms.
And I feel like a lot of your business or a lot of restaurants you've opened have come through word of mouth or at least relationships that you've garnered over time, and so people know you already. So a lot of other restaurant groups, they have their designers that are their go-to and they've worked with before. So you have to, I wouldn't say that they've necessarily blanketed the entire city, but you have carved your corner.
Yeah, I think it's our approach to work is kind of, you know, we've got people that we know that we've done projects for and they'll, you know, recommend us to other people or come back to us when they're doing their next place or... You know, their sous chef will leave and then they'll do their own place and they already know us, or somebody will like ask who did this place and they'll get in touch with us. But I think it's a very kind of organic approach to growing that. It's not like we're going in and kind of like calling people and saying like, we can design your spot, whatever. For us, it's about like finding people who really want to do that special thing and who want to work with us already. Like, we're not trying to kind of kick the door down of anybody and sort of, I think, you know, in years ago in the past when we would kind of, somebody would be like, oh, they're looking for a new designer or whatever, we go introduce ourselves. And that was never the most fruitful way to go about it. It's sort of like they come around when they're ready. If, you know, if somebody likes what we do and they want to talk to us about it, great. If we have to sell them on what we do, it never ends up being as successful.
I mean, like, what is that process? Like when you guys are kind of just initiating conversations, like what, as established designers now in this town, like what do you look for? Like, because I feel like you're probably kind of always looking to do kind of push forward and not do something that you may have done previously already. Like
a lot of it's about neighborhoods and, you know, how people are starting to build neighborhoods and our experience with the neighborhoods of DC, which is why a lot of our work is all in DC and we haven't ventured out as much. It would be really hard to understand the neighborhoods of Chicago or New York the way we understand DC, and to put those pieces all together. And I think when we talk to people and they're starting out with a concept, we're able to visit sites with them and, you know, really see it from the entire DC perspective and figure out where is best for them to go. Is it Shaw? Is it, you know, H Street? And just thinking about that whole location placement concept with them, and with Boundary Stone and Red Hen and the bakery over there and El Camino. Like, we did all of those at the same, very similar time, and they all kind of enhanced each other. And
yeah,
you know, you had your neighborhood
so.
Bar, and then Showtime came in, and that was your dive bar, and it was awesome, and Red Hen, and you yeah. know, the Mexican place and the bakery. So it was like just fun to see. And now we've done that in Shaw as well, with, you know, Calico as the like the outdoor afternoon
right.
hotspot, Tiger Fork, Dabney is more high-end, Columbia Rooms, high-end cocktails, and, you know, just the different places all around that area that we've developed and how they work with each other, I think, is really special.
We try to think about spots really as an ecosystem. I think sometimes you get a concentration, like you can look on like 14th Street here, or like, you know, like West Randolph in Chicago or something, where like you get this kind of restaurant gold rush, but then you kind of get a lot of pretty good but few great, where places end up kind of being all at the same price point, you know, same dollars for cocktails or same check average, and they feel like a little interchangeable, where they're all kind of clamoring after the same patron ultimately. And these places can be really successful, but it's a little feast or famine. Like, I think the ones we like to work on better are the ones that feel like, okay, there's a couple spots on the corner in this neighborhood, or like a few scattered over here, or like if you live within 10 blocks of this place, it's the best. You might not cross the city for it, you know, you might come from out of town, but it's like, I think any place that delivers just higher than what the expectation for that place would be, rather than kind of getting caught up in like that kind of restaurant goldmine arms race, is really special for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting, because you see, like, I mean, you have like the Wharf, which just opened up all at the same time, and we're going to see probably similar activity in Union Markets very soon. And then just to see what you guys, I mean, I used to live in Bloomingdale, and like just see what you guys have done for Bloomingdale, or, you know, with Brooklyn now and Shaw. It's really cool.
Well, there's a little bit of an idea of of the prime directive from Star Trek, in that you say you look at a neighborhood like an ecosystem, but how much do you think you actually affect that ecosystem by opening up something, by designing a restaurant in there?
Well, I think the way we look at it is that, you know, obviously DC has changed a lot in the past 10, 15, 20 years, and it's going to continue to change. And I think we look at change as something that's going to happen regardless of our involvement. You know, nothing is static. So I think when we look at it, we say, like, can we kind of have a hand in guiding this in hopefully what we think of as a better outcome than it might have had otherwise? Like, can we make sure, okay, this space is being rented out, it's going to turn into a restaurant. Can we make it a restaurant that the neighborhood feels like really proud of? Can we make it a space that people are excited to go to? Can we make it a space, like if it's a Michelin star restaurant, can we help guide somebody else to go in there who's selling, you know, $8 sandwiches, you know, right. a couple doors down, like make sure it plays across the spectrum and not just becomes like pigeonholed as this one thing. Like, I think it's really special. You see, like Dabney and Columbia Room was great to get into the alley there, but then you, like, Calico is kind of the other end flip of that. And we worked on like Buttercream and All Purpose. So I feel like to make that kind of the context of, like, and our office is right on that block. We're literally right above Columbia Room. So I think it's something that we're kind of very selfish designers in a way. We think about, like, what would we want to be? What would we want to go to?
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. Where would we want to
be givers? Design is a...
But I mean,
he selfishly put you in that boat.
I think at a fundamental point, it's like, if we can't get excited about, like, what this place is going to be when it's open, how can anybody else get excited right. about that? And I see that sometimes, like, if you told us, like, you know, some, you know, world-class chef or whatever who's got like 20 restaurants is going to do their 21st restaurant in a hotel in DC, or there's like a 23-year-old sous chef who's opening like a little spot with, you know, a 20th of the budget and a fifth of the seats, like, we kind of get more excited about what the sous chef's doing, because ultimately they're going to be there every day behind the counter, like, putting in the work. And right. I think for us, it's about, like, not just how we can spend the most money on a project and do like the best finishes and the best lighting and all this. It's like, how can we make somebody, you know, give somebody something they're really proud of, and like step up to the passion and time they're putting into it.
Right on.
Let's take a short break. And then we'll actually come back and talk about some of those design elements that you want to incorporate and how you come up with your ideas. So I'm with Matthew Ramsey. I'm Eddie Kim. We're with the head honchos at Edit Lab, Lauren Winter and Brian Miller. And we'll be right back.
And this is our 50th episode.
Up all night with the same thing in my head. Just wanting you here next to me. It's been a long time. Don't you agree? We could turn it all around if you say to me.
You're listening to Shift Drink. We're here with Brian Miller and Lauren Winter of Edit Labs. Kind of before we took a break, we were talking about influences and kind of design, how you guys design. It's pretty cool when you guys talk about the concept of kind of designing for a space to actually be lived in, and kind of designing for that wear and tear to actually be a part of everything. You have like so many projects constantly. Where do you guys go to kind of essentially recharge and kind of get inspired and keep it fresh?
We like to travel.
Yeah, very much. I think travel is pretty an intrinsic kind of element for both of us. And I think kind of getting out of our comfort zone, seeing new things, and like even some places you go to and you see when they're brand new, I think even going back to the same place a couple years later and seeing kind of how it's changed, how it's kind of worn in, is really valuable as well.
Is there an example of that? A place that's changed quite a bit?
You've been seeing Chicago a lot.
Yeah, I've been going to Chicago an awful lot for work lately. But I think there's places like, I mean, if you take a place like Balthazar in New York, is like a total, obviously, like restaurant touchstone. Everybody knows it. But they're, you know, I think right now they're pretty locked in. But I think you look at it, how it's changed over the years, and like, you know, people's attention comes and goes. Their menu formatting is like super brilliant. There was like an article in New York Magazine or something like a decade ago breaking down how they format the menu. But at certain points, it's like, okay, now we're doing sales out of like retail sales out of the bakery. You know, now we're opening at X hour. We're peeling our hours back. And you see like, when one of his other restaurants closes, does that somehow, you know, the audience drift over and account for it? Like as the neighborhood changes around it, like where it may have been sort of like the highest end offering in the neighborhood at one point, like it can do the same thing. But again, every place changes.
Right.
So it can become a really different offering within that neighborhood over time just because of how the neighborhood changes.
Can we talk about the Greenbrier? That's
yes.
One of your favorite places to go to for the whole entire team.
Not.
I can't explain the Greenbrier as well as you can. So what is the Greenbrier?
No, I'm going to let Brian do it.
So the Greenbrier is a resort on about 11,000 acres. Maybe they sold a few, but in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia.
Originally late 1700s.
Yeah, started going there for this like kind of medicinal sulfur spring in the 1700s. And you think like, oh, they got like hot springs to hang out in. No, this is like medicinal spring, like soak in the waters, drink the sulfur water. It's horrible. But became like a really big resort. And they built a train line in the 19th century down there. So people would go on vacation. I guess it was the C&O Railroad owned then, built a big hotel, and then knocked it down, built a bigger hotel. The present one built in like from like 1909 to 1913. And then after World War II, where it had been like kind of a hospital for recovering wounded soldiers, They hired the interior decorator Dorothy Draper, who is magical, to redo it, and it's just like, it's like being in a Wes Anderson version of Alice in Wonderland. It's like everything is overscaled and wild and weird colors, and it's like freaks you out for the first couple hours and then makes total sense to be there for a couple days because it's a very much an escape from reality.
Cool.
But yeah, that, it's pretty magical.
And then how does that translate to what you might take out of it? Or is there a complete respite from everything that you do on a daily basis?
You're totally immersed in design the entire time, but it's, you know, there's three wardrobe changes a day. Brian Miller got a whole new wardrobe for this, and none of it was black.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all like...
Brian digs deep into his closet.
He does. How big of a print can you find? How can you match this wall cover? Like, wall covering, you think of these rooms, and you're like, I have this dress for this room, or this is where we're going for dinner, and that's what I'm going to wear, because I'm going to fit in perfectly. And we all went bowling there. We have a lot of fun bowling. But all the girls were dressed in, like, 50s-style skirts. Like, we looked like we were at a...
Sock hop,
you know, and we were all, you know, decked out. And I think part of it's like that costume change and that, you know, just leaving your world behind for a little while and stepping into a new one.
And you have to play to the aesthetics there. They're so otherworldly. And then, like, the service isn't good and the food's not good and there's, like, the crowd's not good. But, like, so the aesthetics are amazing. So you kind of play to those.
And it's nice going as a group because you're not relying on those other aspects. And there's a casino.
Is that kind of... Oh, there is a casino.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
As of about decade ago or so, yeah. Yeah.
And they just opened up a sports book.
So their crowd's changed a lot now, having the sports book open.
This Lauren like and I are degenerate gamblers.
Yes.
So this is...
It did not do
well.
That's
the only kind.
Yeah. You're either degenerate or more degenerate. Well, Eddie and I were talking kind of just before the show, just loosely about influences and inspiration. It seemed like Wabi Sabi kind of plays into your aesthetic a little bit. A specific example.
I talked about the ropes at Red Hen. That's designed. Tail Up Goat. Tail Up Goat.
The macrame, yeah.
Yeah, they are designed by Donata Design, Virginia. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Virginia Arsueno did those. Awesome job.
And I remember you mentioned or you posted that they have fallen, or not fallen, but sagged.
Yeah, they've kind of hung down over their own weight a little bit. So initially when we've got this kind of wood partition that sits behind the bar, dividing it from the rest of the restaurant, and these couple kind of woven fiber hangings in there. And when it first opened, they were cut very accurately to be just above the wood divider. And then they've just kind of gone a little slack over the years, just kind of under their own weight, a little tension, and hang down like a little bit past those wood dividers. And I think it's something that, you know, you look at that and like, it kind of drives me crazy. Like I want to come in there with a pair of scissors and like just cut them off all even. But at the same time, it's like places just kind of age in and you get those like worn spots on a bar or whatever. There's like up at, you know, one of everybody's favorite restaurants, Gramercy Tavern, talk about see a place change over the years.
Right.
I mean, we talked about also the bar top at Red Hen and the Gibson.
Yeah.
Orange Gibson, and black, respectively, leather tops.
Yeah, the embossed leather bar top at the Gibson, which is now a decade old. We thought, like, well, if it goes well, it might last a couple years. And they still have, like, the original belt leather down there. It came up great. But I think, like, Gramercy Tavern, they've got, like, the bar there had, like, this kind of this black finish on it, but it's worn through in a lot of places to the original wood. And obviously, they're on top of their game. Like, they know the bar's a little bit worn there. Like, they could kind of re-lacquer it, whatever. But it feels, like, so approachable because it has that little bit of patina, like that little wear and tear on it, I think makes it a more comfortable place for people to be. Like, it doesn't feel so formal.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of thinking about how these places do wear over time. I mean, you don't want something to look old, but you do want it to feel comfortable. You don't want to seem pristinely new. Like, I remember the first time at Primrose, someone put a crate down filled with lemons and limes, and we got the acid on the zinc bar of the egg crate. And I was like, oh, my God, we're not even open, and we have this stain all over the bar. And, like, all right, it's just going to go. We're just going to see this wear, and it looks great now, and it just has everyone's glass marks on it, and it's just going to get more and more, you know, worn. And I think that's something we look forward to.
I think a lot of materials have what we call kind of like an uncomfortable adolescence. You know, like people look really weird when they're like 12, 13 years old. Like they're not cute kids anymore, and they're not like adults. They get like everybody's got this horrendous awkward phase. And I think materially, too, like a new place gets built out and everything is pristine and it's just gorgeous. And then it gets like a couple marks and you're like, oh, my God, this is the worst thing. Like Lauren's saying with the Primrose Bar. And after a while, it's got like 1,000 marks and scuffs, and it like gets kind of, you know, like handsome,
right,
and
right.
kind of wears
it's,
in.
It's dropped the braces with the like the orange and green rubber bands and moved into sure.
Yeah, you got a little bit like that.
Got rid of the acne.
You got that like mysterious scar itself. You want to ask about.
How does that all play into kind of newer places that open that are specifically designed for the Instagram community that are meant to be pristine from the day and maybe don't have the lasting power as some of the places that we want?
I think it's fine for, you know, I think some places very much open that are made to appeal to that if they've got like, you know, big neon on the wall or whatever. And I think, you know, it's not that we want to go against that in any way, but we want to make sure we're not built for like an app or a moment. I think, you know, our favorite kind of places have been around, you know, 100, 200 years, you know, when we go and visit other cities, you know, those places that have just been around forever, like they made it through like the Spanish flu or whatever. Instagram's right. going to be fine for them.
Yeah.
So I think it's that kind of like what at a fundamental level drives kind of people interacting socially within a space. And I think, you know, you can design a space for the social interaction to be directed outward, but we're always more driven by the interaction that happens within the bounds of that space than beyond them.
We are running a little bit low on time. So why don't we start ask a couple of quick questions?
We got some. We're going to do a special edition of
Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire. So I got a list of design trends from an Eater listicle of the best design trends in restaurants in 2018.
And also just kind of things we've noticed.
Around. And other stuff that we've noticed. So can we do a quick yay or nay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yay.
Edison light bulbs.
Nay.
Yay. Still look good.
Poly design.
What?
Nay.
Poly design like that, just like the kind of geometrical.
Oh, nay.
Yeah. Nay.
Emerald green.
Yay.
Yay.
Lauren is wearing an emerald green skirt with a
velociraptor.
With a velociraptor on her sweater.
Super always cool. Love jewel tones.
Yes.
Plants everywhere.
Yay.
100%
anything in. Live. Yeah. Anything living. Neon. As long as you keep it alive.
I think there's something about walking into an empty space and it's got plants in it. It kind of indicates like this is okay place for living things to be.
Right, right, right. The canary in the cage.
I have a feeling I know the answer to this one. Botanical wallpaper.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. Millennial pink?
Sure. Why Yay. Not? Why not? Let people have their fun.
How about the bend wire chair?
Nay.
No?
It's very uncomfortable.
I've never sat in one.
If you wear a short skirt, then your butt's on it.
For those who don't know, it's a wire chair that's also kind of geometric, usually in gold or some kind of metallic.
And it's everywhere.
And it seems to be everywhere.
Depends on the chair. I think they're great patio chairs. Indoors can get a little more questionable.
Neon signs?
Yay. Brian loves them, they're LED now.
The right ones. If you buy it off of Etsy, questionable, like something that's really commissioned for your space, we love it.
Yeah, awesome. Now we're just going to cut into a couple of just actual rapid-fire questions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you have any design crushes right now, restaurant-wise, in D.C.? Or outside of D.C.?
I am just forever crushing on Clyde's.
And two Amy's.
Not design crushing.
Oh, like, not design
I'm just
crushing.
I'm design crushing on Clyde's always. Like
Lauren loves the pizza. Yeah.
Clyde's always.
Yeah.
What question should I ask? If there was a song to blast out loud over the speakers, you know, no matter how loud Tom Sietsema cares, what would you play?
Oh, definitely Teenage Dirtbag.
Teenage Dirtbag for Lauren.
It's my karaoke song.
Is it?
Yes.
Nice. Like high school, like what was your like first like drink of choice when you were started dipping into your parents' liquor cabinets?
Kahlua and cream.
Oh yeah.
Never did that. Didn't start drinking until I was 21.
Of course.
If I'd known how much I enjoyed it, I would have started earlier. but I was like weirdly big on like Sapphire and tonics in college.
Oh, look at you. Evolved.
Yeah.
Highly evolved from a young age.
Yeah.
How about a final drink? What would you be your final drink?
Oh, a deathbed drink? Is that what you're asking?
Basically.
Oh, like the last one you could ever have?
Mm-hmm. As of now. And that could change.
I think I'd like to have to go champagne cocktail or French 75. Something with bubbles and celebration.
Now, French 75 with gin or cognac?
Gin.
Cognac always. I had to interject there.
That's a dark question. I don't know. I think something like maybe just like a nice little drinking ale, maybe just go with...
How about a Midori Sour for Brian?
Just something on a nice day.
Oh, I fucking love a Midori Sour. I'm with you.
Just a nice day. Maybe I'm having like a little like Sari Chiki or something, like just like a beer, and because that would indicate that my death was very unexpected, which is, I think, the way I would rather go.
Kind of like Sally's like yesterday.
That. Yeah. And let's just jump ahead and let's... Matthew put together a very quick Mary Fuck Kill.
Fuck. Mary. Kill.
All right. Now, these are... I don't really know how to quantify this. These are like commercial, consumer...
Iconic designs.
There we go.
See on a daily basis.
Gone like culty.
Yes. And we often overlook.
So we have the carpet at PDX Airport. We have that iconic 90s jazz solo cup design. And this one might be less known because it was new to me, but the Haunted Mansion wallpaper at Disney World. Are you guys familiar with this one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know this one.
Yeah. Mary, fuck, kill one of these. Or all these.
I'll take this one.
Go for it.
I would probably marry the Haunted Mansion wallpaper. I think it's a classic. I've got a big design crush on the Haunted Mansion. Let's see. Kill. I think that PDX Airport carpet, you got to kill. Like, it's
ridiculous to see, like, people's sweaters wear.
As much as I love it, like, I think functionally within a space, like, it's always such a subject of wear and tear, and, like, you never really get to see it in its, like, pristine state. It's always, like, you know, with a couple years of mopping and gum and, like, whatever on it that's been, like, cleaned again. So it feels a little worse for the wear. I guess it kind of makes it merry, like it lives in, though. So, I don't know.
You don't want to marry that.
It's a mournful kill.
Fuck it.
Yeah, it's kind of seen its day.
We definitely get an STD.
Yeah.
That carpet's seen a lot of wear and tear.
It is from Portland.
And that leaves the jazz
cup.
You know, it's a romantic pattern. It's kind of got me going. There was a great story a couple years ago. I forget which outlet published it. Like, they found the person who designed it and her talking about the overlays she did and everything. And it was a spectacular story. I highly recommend looking it up.
I recently read the story on the guy who designed the wallpaper at the Haunted Mansion. And it's super cool. Because he wasn't... I think he like kind of threw it together and wasn't expecting it to be what it is today, which is everywhere.
What do you think of it, Eddie?
The Haunted Mansion?
You were looking it up?
I'm looking up the jazz cup at the moment. Jazz cup. I read that same piece. It's great.
That's having a real cultural moment right now.
Do you think LaCroix is going to kind of be the next jazz cup? Because it has like...
Definitely got very similar energy.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. You guys are very rarely in the same place anymore these days. Listeners, thank you once again. 50th episode. You can visit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts, including the Spotify and iTunes.
Don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes or give us a 1-star review on Yelp, which we do have a Yelp page.
Yeah, one stars only.
1 stars only, please.
We're trying to be the worst, so you don't have to be.
And a special thank you to Jeffrey Lemereau for our new intro music and DJ Rec Tech for our sound effects.
Next week we have a very special guest coming in from LA. Chef?
We're not going to say it.
Okay.
We're going to keep it a surprise. They're coming in later this week. We will be interviewing them. And we'll throw some hints down. But I think it'll be a great...
Hashtag no big deal / really big deal.
Okay. Anyways. Thanks for listening to us. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com / fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.